if I could just say, you know, I'm coming at it as a literal Bravo outsider, where I don't really watch these shows, and it's not because I don't appreciate them. I look at them the exact same way as I look at baseball, where I think, like, I love to watch it. It's entertaining. It's just so overwhelming to get into. There's such a history. But I remember the first time that I talked to Craig about reality TV shows, and you're like, yeah, you got to start with Vanderpump Rules. Yeah, this was like probably 8 years ago, and I never did. But the fact that I jumped in, my first episode was of this story franchise.
Possibly the last episode
probably
ever.
Probably the last episode ever, yeah.
Definitely felt like it. Definitely felt like it.
Hello and welcome to the Bravo Outsider Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Midwinter, joined as usual by Dylan Ferguson. Dylan, how's it going?
That's me expressing my delight to be here with you guys in the same manner as Teresa expressing her delight with her children.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sure that's a delight to our audio-only listeners, too. They're absolutely appreciating that.
I think Tim was just at the carnival yesterday. Maybe shooting some milk bottles or something. It was
yes.
Got a giant teddy behind him right there.
For the listener, I have a bunch of dead carnies behind me.
Well, that voice you're hearing is none other than our very good friend, Tim Gray.
I'm Tim Gray. I set boundaries, especially with doctors.
I love it.
Wow, that is layered. That is very layered.
Yes. Yeah, it's layered and it's clumsy. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, let's dive in with Vanderpump Rules. Do you want to just give a like 3-sentence summary of what happened this episode as far as you understand it?
Yes, for sure. So Tom absolutely stirring shit up, and it was like, it was I'm bad with names on a good day, and there's just a lot of names coming through on this show, but like, you know, the one, you know, Tom's ex, Ariana.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? That was a master class in boundary setting and sticking to your values. It was quite the unraveling of a long friendships. It was entertaining as hell.
Yeah.
There was a very good concert of great performance, musical performance. Mm-hmm. And then of course the Applebee's, came in at the end, which I assume happens at the end of every episode
of Vanderpump. Yeah, they end every episode at Applebee's. Yeah,
Applebee's somebody presents Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah, but I don't know. I felt like you saw the end of friendships and the strengthening of others, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is it friendships unraveling or is it some friendships re-raveling? I think we get kind of both happening there.
Right. Redefining. Yeah. It's important to constantly redefine your friendships.
Very important.
Yeah. So Dylan, I'm curious as to what your like takeaway was from the presentation of this artistically, both like this episode and the season on a whole, since we do get like kind of the capstone here.
Yeah. I've had moments where I've questioned whether or not the season has just been spinning its wheels, but I should never have doubted these creators' ability to stick the landing, because I thought they nailed the ending in a way that was impressive to me. Very emotional and just like a very rich summary of our capstone on like the themes that we've had all season long about like which version of reality is real reality, like, and what's a person being real, and like, you know, it's mostly centered around who's the real Tom Sandoval. Is there such a thing as a real Tom Sandoval? What's a real relationship versus a relationship for TV? The way it all comes to a head and boils down in this party to this stark distinction between Ariana deciding that she's just not going to give the producers and Sandoval what they want and not engage and not give them, as she wonderfully describes it, as not be the final boss in Tom Sandoval's redemption tour that he gets to confront at the end, versus Tom Sandoval playing ball very much with production to the point where they seem like they're both on exactly the same page and bent towards the same purposes. To wrap that up with a montage of all these performers when they're first trying out for the show with their baby faces and original noses. And just having these sweet kids before they were chewed up and turned into things by the show, have these little montages of their baby faces just kind of refracting into multiple versions and fading out as the show ends. Beautiful. What an artistic choice. Absolutely love it. Love the way they drive home the final themes there and make it very sad too.
And the way they lean into the fourth wall, kind of disintegrating and spiraling off into the various like realities that people are experiencing.
Yeah.
Like the lens just completely goes away and we are seeing everyone like voicing their individual perspectives. We're seeing it like captured from multiple cameras simultaneously. And it gives it a sense of like, this is like an authentic like world with a lot of different perspectives that we're seeing. I loved watching that melt away. It was such a like brilliant choice. There's so much about the way that this season has ended that I think was just done so artfully. And like the season is
said artfully, not fartfully, right?
You said, that's correct.
Okay, just making sure.
But there's so many choices that they made throughout the construction of this season that all kind of came to a head here, and it was brilliant. And I love that we got a reflection of the first couple episodes of Vanderpump Rules at the end here, where we were kind of focused on Tom Sandoval at the beginning of this season being surrounded by this like crew of random misfits and like people that we as viewers aren't like really familiar with. We've maybe like seen them here and there, but like
You didn't watch just them
a bunch of just like random people. And then we got this ending where Ariana leaves and she's the one that is surrounded by all these like this random crew that we like sort of recognize from the background, but Sandoval is the one that has the full like cast that we're familiar with around him and onside. I just thought that it was just such an artful choice to like highlight that at the beginning so that we got that reflection at the end. I loved it.
Yeah, it was superb drama, like truly laid out and played out. Cause it does remind me of sports because it you know, there's a level of controlled chaos, right? With hockey, they have set plays, there's rules, they're always drunk. And in this world, you know, you have the characters, you have the roles that they play, but you don't know what they're going to say or how it's going to play out. And, it's just so, so riveting to watch these people be so self-aware of who they are in this cultural moment and what the impact, like that final monologue where she's like, you know, you say, You be your most honest when you're the most uncomfortable, and then you think you can just turn it off and move on with your life, but you can't, right? Because especially then they're in the public eye, it keeps coming at them in waves, and some of that is maybe criminal, but a lot of it is just the public eye. I mean, they probably can't even go like grocery shopping without someone being like, "Oh, I heard Tom slept with somebody else."
Yeah.
You know, but kind of a nightmare.
Yeah. There's a moment earlier where, like, I think Ariana and Katie described coming back in an Uber, and they were like shocked that their Uber driver didn't recognize them. They're like, "What the hell? Yeah. Who is this guy? Where does he live? Like, that doesn't know who we are." But I also think it just one big theme that we've had this series is just how these people have probably lost touch of a way of processing their own lives beyond the show, both when the show is being filmed and also even during the off season when, like you say, because they are celebrities, they're so basking and surrounded by in and all this drama that's happening on, you know, whatever, Instagram and Reddit and stuff like that. And, and it's just like how would they even know what they are anymore without that at this point?
Yeah. And they're, you know, and then they're like, oh God, you know, the season's over, but they still have to listen back the back catalog of Bravo Outsider because they were too busy when the episodes were being released.
They got to get caught up on our takes, of course.
Just quick shout out to Ariana for, I know you're listening.
I think you picked the person least likely to listen to us.
Joe, we know you're listening.
Yeah.
Joe, turn it off. Get back to your priorities.
I do want to talk a little bit more about the ending still and how it compares to the, like, what was seemingly the series finale that they shot last season prior to the Scandoval breaking, where we saw it take place at Sur as a, like, really trying to bookend the series, and we got it ending on this big, like, finale speech from Lisa Vanderpump. That definitely felt like the intended series finale. I'm curious, Dylan, how do you feel about this as a potential series finale versus the one that we got last season?
Way better if you're comparing it to, like, Lisa's speech about, like, you know, we're all friends and we've had hard times and good times or whatever. Like, that would have been a lame way to end it. The actual final episode that we got last season, the Scandival episode they tacked on at the end, was an amazing piece of TV as well, as we've covered. So that would have been a nice ending. But I think I like this one even more with the way that, like I said, circles back to the origins of these characters, just dipping their toes into the world of being TV performers and forces us to reflect on what's become of them. And also forces us to reflect on ideas of truth and reality and just interrogating the idea of, like, who is more right here between, kind of the Tom Sandoval perspective of, I would say, is what is most real is what is on camera, and the perspective that Ariana ends up embracing, which is what is most real is what is not on camera.
Yeah.
And I just think those two themes really end up combining really nicely as a way to end the series, in both the combination of, like, you know, these people being warped by the show and that throwing the notion of reality into disorder. And we also kind of get Lala's perspective throughout this show resolving too, because as I've talked about before, Lala's kind of become almost an audience insert in this season, because she's been positioned as the one who can move between both worlds, between Team Ariana and Team Tom, and has been presented as being a little more level-headed. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the kind of final perspective she ends up staking out is that she officially renounces Ariana because she's not a professional, right? That seems to be what Lala's final criticism of Ariana is that, this is your job. This is my job.
Right.
You know, I've spent most of my adult life doing this. Like, she literally says, this is what we do. And she really does become the voice of production at that moment. Like, that's kind of the ultimate moment of her perspective being twins with production's perspective, that she, like the producers who are trying to get Ariana to stay and trying to get Ariana to speak with Tom, which, again, I love the fact that we have the producers on camera saying to Ariana, no, you have to, you're supposed to talk with him right now. This is what you're supposed to do in this scene.
And I was going to ask, like, was that guy actually a freaking producer? Like,
and Lala's voicing that perspective of, you're a professional, we are professionals, this is supposed to be what we do.
I really like this idea of, you know, we've talked about Lala as this, like, insert for us. I think that Lala is, like, an insert for us as, like, some members of the audience. what I think she's also like this lens insert. Like she is the insert for production, like you said, which is distinct from us as an audience, because I think that mm-hmm. there's a huge portion of the fandom that would consider Katie a more appropriate self-insert character than Lala this season, because she is taking the same, like the hard line that Ariana has, and there's sure, yeah. a lot of people online that are, you know, towing that line as well. So I think there's different, like people can project themselves into this show via a number of different characters.
Yeah, totally.
And I think it's interesting to finally see Lala as not just a, like a viewer insert, but a production insert. Yeah, I can't get over how nuanced this ending was, and I actually hope that we don't get any more Vanderpump Rules, because I think that this is the way that like it needs to end. I think that, you know, you can bring these people back in some other form. I don't think it's going to be Vanderpump Rules anymore.
Half
I think
of them can move over to the Valley, right?
Yeah, totally. I think one of the things that like I have criticized about Vanderpump Rules over the years,
famously
before we had this podcast, so I don't have the receipts. Maybe I'll scroll back in the group chat if you want to challenge me. Is that you know, it has been a number. There's been a number of occasions where it has felt like the Vanderpump Rules construct has been broken. Like we had no longer does it make sense for them to be, you know, servers at Sir and living, you know, in apartments together and stuff like that. It just, there was a point where that didn't make sense, but Vanderpump Rules was able to like evolve and expand in order to like allow for these like these larger lives, because these people were still able to like work together, and Vanderpump Rules has evolved and kept expanding in order to be able to contain these lives and be able to present them. This felt like a moment where they have finally like exploded out of the construct. The construct of Vanderpump Rules has broken. Fourth wall is dissolved. These people are not, it's not feasible for them to work together anymore. They're freezing each other out, and so we're seeing this like the multiverse collapse and the construct of Vanderpump Rules dissolving and spiraling off. Just absolutely brilliant. Everywhere, everything, all at once, could never.
They went where everything all at once couldn't.
You know.
It really does feel like after kind of transcending the boundaries of the kayfabe of pretending that they're servers at a restaurant, they have then like recently proceeded to transcend the boundaries of like pretending that they're not acting for a show in a way. It's become so meta at the point that now that we finally reach a point where they're literally talking with producers, and Lala's literally saying, I'm going to break the fourth wall here by saying this. And like, they're literally interrogating the idea of like on camera, off camera, while they're still on camera. Like it's all the boundaries have completely broken at this point.
Can I go back a little bit?
And that actually started with Sheena and not Lala for breaking the fourth wall. Sheena was the first person to be like, well, do I mean a lot to you for the show, or do I mean a lot to you because of life? That is kind of an unexpected person to actually break the wall, because she is like a pro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Guys, do you mind if I go back in the episode a little bit and ask you a question that I'm sure is on their mind now?
Yeah, please. We've only talked about like the last 5 minutes so far. So, let's backtrack and
backtrack a little bit, just a little bit. Have you guys ever had a threesome?
Yeah, personally, I have never. And I don't, and I'm like in the camp but where it I is don't,
on your bucket list?
No, it doesn't. The idea doesn't appeal to me. Like, I just feel sounds stressful to me. Like, I would like, for me, like the fun of sex is that you're putting all your attention in one person. If I have to divide my attention between two people, then there's like too much like to use like the Freudian terms, like super ego, like getting in there right. and being like, oh, like, am I like,
sure.
you know, dividing my attention improperly? Like there's too much to think about yeah. in that situation. That's yeah. how I imagine. I haven't done it, but it, to me, that sounds yes. stressful. That sounds like,
right.
like less sexy than just being focused on one person.
Do you think, do you think three is where it's weird? Do you think the higher the number of people involved, the less that becomes an issue?
I feel like if you get into pair numbers, then you're just like fucking sure. together in a group. Like,
yeah.
because you're just presumably just going to pair off. It's if it's pair numbers, and if it's impair what? Numbers, then okay. it's like,
what if you had a special power where on the palms of your hands, you can grow penises. So you could theoretically have three people going. Anyways,
that changes everything. So,
that was such an interesting conversation in that Chinese restaurant, though. I mean, that's where I really felt, oh my God, this is like the amount of steeping that has gone on in these relationships is so potent. You really felt which characters were new, especially. When Dan, was it, the new boyfriend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was just getting absolutely gorilla'd.
Yeah, by Lala.
Yeah, by Lala.
Literally giving him the job interview
yeah.
session. Yeah.
You see yourself in 5 years. Like yeah.
So, what Tim, would you describe as your greatest weakness?
Since this was your first episode, I'm curious, leading yeah. up to that scene, what do you think the backstory for these characters were? Like, who stood out to you? What do you think their stories are?
Right. The two ladies that were in the bed together.
Katie and Lala?
Katie and Lala, yeah. Sorry. They felt like you can kind of tell which you can there was a depth to the characters that I felt like had been there the longest, you know, and then you felt like the other pieces, I felt the other pieces of the cast that were kind of, I don't know if they were brought in or incorporated or whatnot. I don't know, but like that, just to the comfortableness on camera when it comes to like Lala and company. I think I've heard this term, Scandoval.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So obviously it's very catchy as heck. Do you think if it wasn't so catchy, it wouldn't have been such a big deal that he slept around a little bit?
Well, I think that's actually a good question. If it didn't have the kind of branding of Scandoval, would it
right.
have been as big of a story?
Right.
I think that it probably wouldn't have been to the same extent, but it still would have been a pretty major thing. Like, it blew up within the fandom, and then it
right.
exploded outside of the fandom. I think that still would have
yeah.
happened. I don't know if it would have had the same legs without, like, catchy branding, but...
Yeah.
But maybe the branding was an inevitability, like,
right.
mm-hmm. you know, some sort of hashtag was going to get applied to this. It's just the world yeah. that these people operate in.
I almost feel sorry for this Tom fellow because he seems like he operates in a way that he thinks he needs to survive and not be alone and find love. Like
you've described all of us, Tim.
Yeah. I know we're just trying to not be alone. But you know, he seems to be doing it in kind of a manipulative way, like maybe he's yeah. afraid to be his authentic self, and so he, you know, he thinks like he's like he's really lost in his own ego.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps
yeah. There's, that's something that's
yeah,
that's really being interrogated, I think, for me.
Yeah.
as and we've talked about before on the show, like, is there some off camera Tom that's more real? And that's the thing that, as you mentioned, Craig, Sheena is uneasy about, which he literally says, like, is this like a filming friendship or is this a real friendship? And Ariana makes a point at the end where she's like, Tom could have done something off camera if he wanted to talk to me. He could have left a note or something. He could have done something
yeah.
off camera. That would have been more real if it was off camera
yeah.
from her perspective. But
yeah.
but from his perspective, it's like, what's happening on camera is more real. And I think that's actually like a really interesting, like, philosophical question. Like,
yes, it is.
It's like that, if when the tree falls in the forest thing, like, is it,
yeah,
if there's somebody there to hear it, is that what validates its reality? Or if the tree fell with nobody nearby, would it be more real because our perceptions wouldn't be there to pollute and misinterpret the reality of it?
Right. I always heard that phrase, not as tree falling, but as a frog farting. But I guess
it's a different school of Buddhism, I think, that you studied in.
So I think mine was Buddhism. It is so interesting. Like, sorry, there's a cat running around behind me, zooming around. What is real? Like, if he would have left, obviously in my heart, I'm like, if he would have left that note off camera, said something off camera to her, would that have changed anything for her? Like, would she have stayed at the party? Would she have let Tom clumsily and half drunk come up to, like, her multiple times in the party to talk to the person beside her, clearly just to try to, like, stir shit up in a clumsy way, though. Like, there wasn't a, I don't know.
I mean, Tom is so aware of the cameras. That's kind of one thing that has been hammered home, both on screen as well as in, like, the New York Times article that came out about him. Just he's so aware. He is always thinking about his, like, on-screen angle, presentation and his story. So, I mean, it was clear that this party was going to be the finale for the season. He was trying to make sure that he got on camera this confrontation that everyone has been waiting for between Tom and Ariana, because this is something that everyone has wanted since episode one of this season, is to,
so,
like,
is he doing it to serve the audience, or is he doing it for himself?
He does everything to, like, serve himself,
serve the audience, but, and himself,
you know, by serving the audience, that, like, the audience is his tool for self-service.
I think in this moment it's the same thing. Like, that what the audience wants is what production wants is what he wants, which is him and Ariana face to face talking.
Right.
And then the fact that Ariana leaves and kind of pisses off everybody, production, Lala, Sheena to a certain extent, and definitely Sandoval.
Definitely Tim.
It feels like the final moment of, like, production and the show, whatever the show means, all of it, finally taking Sandoval's side, having the notable cast surrounding him, like you said, Craig. But then what I love about the way they present it is that they do present Ariana's perspective. They do have her saying, like, I don't have to do this if I don't want to. Like, I don't have to participate. She's being Bartleby the Scrivener. She's saying, like, I prefer not to. Like, I don't have to. And that they give us that the very final moment is just the audio of Sandoval being like, I love it. It's good for me. And and I love the way they complicate the ending there by being like, the show has taken Sandoval's side, but then also we're going to kind of undermine both us and him by pointing out how this is serving his agenda and not Ariana's agenda.
That was the last line of
the last moment of potentially the series.
And so Tom got the final say, which is what he wanted, but it was a monkey's paw because
there you go.
What he said, not such a nice thing.
I love that they made sure to capture the producer saying, you know, this is it, this is the end, before saying that, like, it was this coda at the end. So another brilliant choice in that end. There's just so much to dissect in that ending. But let's move on to the quote. Tim, did you pick a quote that stood out to you from this episode?
It was the one that well, I guess maybe the have you ever had a threesome? That would be an early option. This is so loaded at the end, but I just like that last line. I forget by Ariana where she says, "You have your moment of honesty, even when it's uncomfortable.
Oh, was that Lala?
Lala, sorry, yeah, Lala. That was Lala. Yeah, Lala. That final piece from Lala was quite powerful.
Yeah, she kind of gives the perspective of this is why we have to have these things on camera. This is why we have to be professionals because we're like, it's our job to create a document and Ariana is betraying our job. I like that moment from her.
It was a professional move, but it was also like somebody at their wit's end, somebody that just doesn't give a fuck anymore. Someone that's just like at the end of it. And truly, like you were saying, the fourth wall, it felt like it completely dissolved at that point.
Yeah, it also felt like her being like, I have surrendered so much of my life to this show.
Yeah,
how dare other people not do the same? You know, it felt like she was being like, I've lost so much to being on Vanderpump Rules. It has fucked up my life so much. So how dare she pretend like she gets to just recuse herself from it?
Right,
like it's down to it. We're all stuck in this hell together. Like you're not supposed to be able to walk out. If I'm trapped in here, you're supposed to be trapped in here too.
Right. The episode is going to air whether you walk away or you stay.
Yeah.
So. You know, yeah, it made me feel sorry for them, right? Because the premises of these shows is people have to have archetypes and characters. They have to have bad people, good people. You could cheer for and hate and all that stuff. But at the end of this episode, I felt like all these characters are so complicated, and so I felt sorry for them. But I also really saw them as human beings, not just one thing or the other. Except for, of course, Tom. I didn't feel like Tom showed many layers there. But yeah,
let's dive into our highlights. Dylan, what were your highlights?
I mean, look, we've gone over the ending pretty thoroughly, I think, at this point. So I could keep talking about it, but I don't think we need to keep passing over it. So I'll just point out a couple funny moments, like when Brock says of being in the trolley in San Francisco, I feel like I'm in a scene from Mrs. Doubtfire. Like that's his reference for a movie scene in San Francisco. It's not like Vertigo or Bullet or Dirty Harry. It's like, yeah, Mrs. Doubtfire was shot here. Like that's the only movie classic Brock moment. just great stuff from Brock.
I saw one movie, it was good, and now I don't need to see any other movie.
Yeah.
Movies, good, Brock, on to the next thing.
This is Movie Reviews with Brock. I haven't seen this one because it's not Mrs. Doubtfire, so it probably sucks.
I'm giving 2 stars to Schindler's List. Anyways, fans, keep sending in movies you want me to review that I haven't seen. One quick highlight was when they were again at that restaurant. That scene, I really liked it because they got stuffed into the small room together. The food that was coming out looked good. I didn't see anybody eat any of it, but when they all got 7 beers, and then what's his name gets a Coke, and then just the way she said, "Do you have a Diet Coke?"
Yeah,
thank you. that's got to be a sponsorship.
She didn't trust the quality of their sparkling water. I think that's what that means.
I think we covered. Yeah, the ending was obviously my highlight. There was another moment in that lunch that I really liked, and actually, it was a parallel with something that happened at the end when Lala says during her confessionals, you know, when Ariana gets past Sandoval the monster, she's going to have to go through a grieving process. Mm-hmm. I like how this contrasted, you know, Ariana talking about herself being the final boss monster in Sandoval's journey. Just like it really kind of captured the two separate journeys that they're on and how they both need this confrontation with each other in order to like move on in the healing process. Just one little moment that stood out, and how, again, they're just so keen at constructing these episodes that they're able to include these parallels. It just makes
That's
it
wild.
Such a complex watching experience.
Yeah, I like that line from Lala too, because that also is something that I kind of agree with, in the sense that, I've said before on the show, I'm not sure that Ariana's strategy is the best thing for her, like in terms of her mental health and actually processing what she's been going through and mourning the relationship, as Lala says it. It feels like she's avoiding her emotions rather than trying to deal with them. For me, it's kind of, I'm kind of conflicted between feeling like that Ariana's maybe behaving in a way that's unhealthy for herself, but also feeling like she does have the right to walk away from the show. And that's kind of like a moment of freedom for her, of almost radical freedom from the show's clutches. And it's interesting to contrast Lala's concern for Ariana with her anger at Ariana for walking out from her professional perspective, as we've already covered.
Yeah, it's kind of punk. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, was that producer? Was that CM Punk? Was that who that was? Wrestler. No. How long do they spend in the editing bay? Are they editing the show as the events are unraveling? Do they, like, it's got to be, it's like,
so how do they not get
an Oscar for editing these things?
First of all, it's television.
It's an Emmy, and they got snubbed last season, actually.
They should have got a Grammy, at least.
Yeah. Sheena should have got a Grammy, at least.
Definitely.
Do we like Sheena's performance, by the way?
I was surprised. Like, I thought it was really good.
I thought it was paid off.
Yeah.
My big criticism was that her outfit seemed like less Met Gala and more like Halloween spirit. Like, it seemed very like plasticky, cheap quality.
Huge.
No, the worst outfit. The worst outfit was Ariana's friend, who was in yellow instead of gold. Like,
that's
like
fucking bright.
Oh,
yeah. Screw that loser.
Yeah.
The guy who when Joe shows up, he's like, "Oh, my favorite crackhead. Fuck you, buddy."
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, take that suit back to Forever 21, you fucking loser.
Take that suit back to the guy who kidnapped Curious George, you jackass.
I bet you like your wieners like you like your coffees, flat white. Anyways.
Yeah, a subtle nod to colonialism up from this guy's outfit here. I think we covered most of my highlights here. Let's move on to our stars. Tim, we'll start with you. Who are your stars?
Oh, the star for me was, I'm going to give it to Tom for being in the shadows. Having a lot of the cast not want to talk to him or be able to talk to him due to personal sides that they've chosen, and then still being such a center point for the episode. Obviously, his scandal is like keeping him number one, on the on the Billboard top 100 people to watch on TV. But I don't know. Just, I mean, without Tom in that episode, that would have been pretty boring.
One thing about Tom that I didn't mention, though, I noticed that every time that we saw him at the beginning of this episode when he was in his hotel room, there's a number of scenes where he's just being splashed with like a variety of different colors of light. And there's a scene where he's talking with Schwartz, and he Sandoval's under this light that keeps like changing colors, like a galaxy light or something. And,
right.
Schwartz is outside of this light, and it's just like, interesting that he got this lighting treatment. We, didn't see the source of it.
Is it the ghost of Rachel just flitting through the set?
Yeah.
I'm assuming Rachel's a character that died tragically.
Yes.
You can say that, from the show's perspective. Left the show tragically, let's say, which is the same thing.
Yes. Yeah. Off of a cliff.
Raquel died so Rachel could live.
Yeah, there we go.
How sad was that hotel room, though? Remember what that he's like, oh, you really like bread bowls.
Yeah, a bunch of empty bread bowls in the hotel room. That's such a weird
bread thing. Bowls. That's so weird.
Absolutely bizarre.
Are you just eating spinach dip nonstop? What the hell? Tom, your men will literally crush bread bowls before going to therapy.
Just calling down for room service. Hey, can I have another bread bowl of soup? Are you sure you don't want it in a real bowl? Because there's a lot of empty. I said in a bread bowl.
Okay, can we take away the other one?
No.
Those are my chamber pots.
Dylan, who are your stars?
I'm gonna give my number one star to Jo, because she's the one who's least destroyed by this show, as much as they're trying to destroy her. Yeah. So even if she has just a tiny appearance and just gets chewed out by Katie, she's never done anything wrong except for apologizing to Katie. That's the only mistake she's made. She had nothing to apologize for, and that's just for being
killing her pet turtle for that.
Oh
wait, what? I don't remember that.
Kills her pet turtle.
Early on in the season, she talks about how like she had a pet turtle that she was out walking on a leash or something like that, and it fell down a sewer.
Right.
Oh my god. Oh,
she would be walking a pet turtle on a leash too. Oh my god. You know what? I've seen that once. Once I was in a park, reading in a park, and I saw somebody walking a turtle on a leash, and it was like the most excruciating thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Just torture to watch. Just the way that moves at about an inch every minute was just like, I couldn't stand it. So she probably killed that turtle on purpose, because that would drive me mad.
We don't know that it's dead. It's in a sewer.
Yeah, that's true.
Turtles thrive in sewers.
Famously. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It could be learning karate right now as we speak.
Yeah, exactly.
It could have been oozed on. You know, you don't know these things. You don't know. You can't speculate. Okay. So be careful. But also, like, how unconfident are you in your ability to walk fast that you have to put your fucking turtle on a leash?
Yeah.
Like, that's just another level of, like, I own this thing.
Well, apparently she was right to have it on a leash, because she's letting that thing fall into gaps everywhere, which...
Well, I mean, I don't understand... Did she let go of the leash and then it fell through?
I'm not confident that the leash part of this story is true.
Okay.
My memory could be failing me. And maybe it wasn't even a turtle. Maybe it was a ferret.
A neighbor. Yeah.
A neighbor.
Maybe it was Tom Schwartz found the sewer and reemerged with bleached hair. Anyways, I'm going to go a little bit off the board to give Joe the stars, like, because everybody else is too poisoned and ruined by the show to take it. But why don't we give a second star to, let's give it to Tom Sandoval. I mean, how can you not? It's been his show for better or for worse, often for worse. Yeah. It's been his show. He's seized control of it again, really, is what's happened. He's really seized control of the show again. And he's a bizarre narcissistic weirdo, but he's managed to make all this happen. All this fascinating nasty multi-surfaced bizarre thing that the show has become is mostly thanks to him. So whatever, we'll give him a second star, and let's get a third star.
Does Tom have a merch line?
Oh well, he's got those Tom like logo hats, like hoodies and hats and stuff.
Oh, okay.
He's probably got like Tom Sandoval and the most extras merch too. And Shorts and Sandy's, his other restaurant's merch is probably sitting in a warehouse somewhere. So third star to Ariana too, because again, like, just her decision to walk away was kind of a fascinating choice that gave us that great ending as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree with your stars there. I do want to talk just a little bit more about Joe and Katie, this apology. Dylan, right. You mentioned that it's a mistake. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Okay. First of all, there's no way that she was going to get anything from Katie, right? Like there's zero chance that Katie Maloney is going to be like, oh yeah, you know what? Thanks for apologizing. That's kind of you. Let's shake hands. Like, obviously there's no world is that going to happen in. And I don't see how she ever did anything wrong. Like if Katie wants to be mad at Schwartz for, you know, hooking up with somebody too soon after they broke up, okay, that's somewhat reasonable. I do think you break up with someone and you've kind of more or less lost your right to dictate what they do with their lives, but he still does owe something to you as somebody who shared so much of his life with you. So I can understand that perspective. But what does Joe owe to you, Katie? Nothing. Like, she owes nothing to you. That's not your friend. You hate her. Like, you treat her like shit. You insult her all the time. And now you expect her to organize her life around your preferences. It just seems illogical to me.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Okay, let's move on to New Jersey. So we have a brand new season, Real Housewives of New Jersey, and one thing that we like to do is talk taglines, give them a rating, guess whose is whose. Nice. Dylan, you have not seen or heard these yet?
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't get the taglines in the episode I watched. Have they not dropped them yet? Eh? Okay, so I have not
Heard them. They're published, but they weren't on this episode.
Nice. So. We haven't done this in a long time.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm. They were published, but they weren't in the episode.
Yeah, they were released. I don't know. Usually they
in hardcover.
Exclusive.
Yeah, Craig's got a stack of these on his nightstand next to his bed. When he's nodding off at night, he puts on some reading glasses and opens up the latest edition of Housewives Taglines.
Yeah, you gather the family, they sit around,
throw some logs on the fire. Kids, it's time for new taglines.
Okay, let's start with, when you're taking cheap shots, I'm taking screenshots.
Okay, so I've got to guess who this is, right?
You got to guess and give it a rating.
Okay. Who's been taking screenshots here? I want to say, oh, somebody who's neck deep in the drama, but that's everybody on the show. So, I feel like that could be Melissa. And I can tell by her face it's not. And I think it's I think it's a mid one. I think this is like a B minus. It's okay. You know, it's got a rhyming factor, but it's like, it's kind of one layer. There's, you know, it doesn't have a pun, really. It's just a rhyme.
Right. Could be better. Just a rhyme. Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Tim, what do you think?
I think. Can I hear it again? Can I hear it one more time from the top?
When you're taking cheap shots, I'm taking screenshots.
Yeah. Can we try it with like a Cockney accent?
You're right. You put a little stank on it.
not doing that.
I do like it because it's a current. People are taking screenshots all the time. I'm doing it every day. But yeah, it could be a more a better pun. Now, I don't know the characters of this. I've seen I think three or four episodes maybe of this New Jersey show. So I don't really know the characters that well. I'm looking at a cast list. I'm going to say, was it Melissa?
It is not Melissa. So this is Margaret.
Okay. That was my next guess.
Sure. Yeah.
I was close. I was close.
That was my next guess too. Yeah.
I'd say that this is a B. I like it, I think, better than you do, Dylan. I don't know. I like the rhyme.
The other thing it's not really a rhyme because you're using the same word twice. You're using shots twice. So it's like... not a great rhyme.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The rhyme police.
I am. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and he just pulled out his badge and gun. Okay. Okay.
If you don't have my back, at least have a backbone.
Oh, I'm going to give that a.
I feel kind of the same way that it's like, the wordplay is not great. It's just good enough. I'll do another B minus. I'd say that's Danielle. Is that Danielle?
No, it's not. Yeah, I'd say this is like, I like this one less than Cheap Shots, Screenshots. This is Rachel Fuda. I think that this is a C plus maybe.
Yeah, it's not amazing.
That was my initial thought, but the more I sit with it, I kind of like it. Because if you're not going to have my back, at least have a backbone. Now that's a shit rhyme if I ever heard one. I think, you know, Dylan, you're a rhyme expert.
Also, you know what? Let's just point out that a backbone and a back is basically the same thing. So you know what? This is actually sea level for me the more I think about it, because it's you're not even really saying two different things. You're just saying like,
no, it's if you don't have my back, at least have your own.
Right.
At least have a spine.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. At least have a spine. Yeah. At least have your own back if you can't support my spinal column.
My spine.
Stand straight on your own spinal column.
That's a cleaner version. T-shirts. Let's make T-shirts. If you're not going to have my spinal column, at least have a spinal column of your own.
Friends are like handbags. The fake ones are all too easy to spot.
That's okay. I'll give it a C.
That's the kind of one that's like, it could be anybody's tagline at any time. Like, it just feels so unspecified and just so like a general, they feel like that could be like a lineup of like general usage housewife taglines that have yet to be claimed and that anybody can pick. So that's like kind of my issue with it.
Cleared for air, but it's not going to make the highlights.
Yeah, there you go. I'll give that a C plus. Maybe I'm just getting tired of there not being a knockout one yet. Who would that be, though? Is that Dolores? Maybe.
Nope.
I'm striking out on all of these.
Yeah, this is Jennifer Aydin. Yeah, it would be hard to guess from this one because there's like nothing.
Right.
I mean, all three of them feel have like, except like, unless the screenshot is referring to something specific, which I suppose it probably is. The three of them so far have felt very general to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Margaret's is like, last season her storyline was this arsenal that she supposedly has. So I guess maybe that's what that's going for.
She's taking screenshots. Here's the next one. The arsenal, sure.
Yeah. You could try tear me down, but this tree keeps on growing.
Well, it's Teresa.
Yeah. Teresa.
Tree. Yeah. Okay. You know what? I like it. I like there we go. We've got the specificity. We've got using her nickname in it. That just actually reminded me of like a good line in Vanderpump Rules too. That was, Joe had a good line in Vanderpump. Well, I forgot to mention it until now, but you just brought up to me. Like, Joe was talking about confronting Katie and she says, like, I could be a tree and she would try to chop me down. anyways, good line. So you just reminded me of that. This is good. I'll give it like A-. It's not like superstar level, but I like the kind of awkward pun. I like the way that it's specific to her.
I echo that sentiment.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. A-, pretty good. I don't hold grudges. I send them to voicemail.
I'm actually not sure I completely understand this one, to be honest.
Right.
I don't hold grudges. I send them, so the grudge is somebody calling you and you're saying, I'm not going to hold you by picking up. Picking up would be holding the grudge, and by sending it to voicemail, I am choosing not to touch it. The grudge, which is you calling, you are the grudge, or your message is the grudge, which I would be holding if it came through the receiver into my ear in real time rather than afterwards. I feel like I'm on the boundaries of understanding it, but I haven't yet gained entrance to the kingdom.
I think it's a play on hold. Like, I don't put grudges on hold. I set it to voicemail.
There's the master key that I was missing. I knew there was a handle I was failing to grasp. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. You know what? Idiot. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah. No, I do feel very stupid right now. Thanks, Craig. this is pretty good. I'll give this also a minus. This is a pretty good one. Yeah. I like this. The pun is like unexpected. Like, holding grudges is not like you're approaching that term from an unexpected angle, using the word hold in two different ways. That's pretty good stuff, actually. That's good. I like that. Yeah. I would say that this is, so we've done Rachel, Teresa, Jen, Aiden. We've had their lines already. Well, Margaret, we've had her line. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's getting narrowed down.
It's probably not.
It could be Melissa. Hey, I'll say Melissa. That could be her. Yeah.
No, that one's ChatGPT, actually. So
what? No. Fuck you.
Okay. Okay. Here's a real one. It's hard not to burn bridges when you're on fire.
Oh.
Good. This is good. I like this one. This is dynamic. Oh, you know, the way that, like, you twist from burning bridges, which is a dramatic image, to an unexpected image, which is even more dramatic, of the person being on fire, and the way fire is both negative and positive at the same time. Mm-hmm. This has got energy. This has got it. This is the juice. Yeah. This is a saucy tagline. So
locked in.
Yeah, I'm giving it an A. Down the middle, straight down the middle, A. And you know, I'm a hard grader here. I've said her three times, I think, but I'm going to say Melissa again.
You're right. It is Melissa. Yeah. And nice. This is an A, maybe even A+ tagline. I like
this is getting into A+ territory. This is good stuff.
Yeah. Skirting on it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm bougie, unbothered, and above your drama.
Danielle. Right away. She loves the word bougie. It's not very good, though.
No.
Bougie, unbothered, and above your drama. Yeah, you're listing things. Where's the pun? Yeah. Where's the play on words? Where's the unexpected twist in the second half? Yeah, it's a D for me, too. There's nothing happening.
Yeah. So finally, we got Dolores. She's the last one left. I'm a girl from Patterson playing Switzerland, dating an Irishman.
I mean, again, you're kind of just describing things. Like, it's not.
Yeah, right.
It's like there's not a play on words there. Unless Patterson and Switzerland are supposed to kind of rhyme, and Irish, they're not really. I guess you could make a case that it's a pseudo rhyme. Like, they both have like two syllables with Patterson, Switzerland. Irishman, three syllables. I'm good at counting.
Yeah.
It's not really a rhyme. It's okay. It's C minus. It's better than Danielle's.
You're trying to play with geography here, like, you know, you got a city, a country, and then
you're a little off.
like a person from a place.
Yeah.
This one is like kind of awkward. It could have used some workshopping, I think, and it maybe would have been like a B+. But this is a B- for me.
This one for
me, high for me. I'm C minus on this.
This one's all over the map.
There we go. Okay, let's dive right into a summary of this episode. Tim, do you want to tell us what's going on here?
No. I know that there was again, a loaded drama. It's the first episode back. There's characters who are fighting. There's a divorce. There's a child going off to college. There's a dog peeing on the carpet. I watched this episode, and I got to admit, I was quite I had indulged in some legal cannabis, and and so I watched this one last night, and I And then I was reading this Vulture recap this morning, and there's something that I missed. I think it's probably of note. I'm sure it's on the outline. We're going to get to it, but Gorga preparing for freshman year at University of Delaware, and she hasn't even started doing anything other than watching her dog pee on the curtains. And she's packing 52 pairs of blue jeans. 52 pairs of blue jeans to go off to college. Now
you need one every week of the year.
I know that. Everyone knows that. But it begs the question, how many blue jeans did you guys take to college? So anyways, that's my recap.
Okay, that's pretty good. Dylan, wanna talk about the presentation of this episode?
Yeah, I'm not sure much really stood out for me in terms of like the aesthetic presentation, other than it had a killer opening montage, which is what we expect. And that was a lot of fun. Otherwise, it was a pretty straightforward first episode. We take our turns going through different family dynamics, this family, that family, that family, before we get a confrontation in the end. So it, like, aesthetically, it wasn't really blowing my mind or anything. And in terms of what's going on in the episode, well, it's first episode, so, you know, we got to kind of wait and see. I think what jumps out at me most in the episode is just how aggro Ozempic'd John Fuda is. Like, he seems like a whole different person from what we saw in the last season, right? When we got to know John Fuda, he was like, he seemed like a cuddly teddy bear in the first season. Yeah. And now I don't know what they're putting in his Ozempic that makes him so angry, but he is like becoming like his gangsterish like presence in the show, which I'm here for.
Testosterone as well as Ozempic.
Maybe.
Yeah. He's pumping tea.
Maybe he's pumping tea.
How much Ozempic do you guys take every day?
A little bit of with my coffee in the morning.
Yeah, I microdose it in the morning.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah, Dylan, you were mentioning like the aesthetic presentation on this, and I think you're right. The most striking thing was the intro that we got. I love the like shot of the statuesque Dolores with everything around her in shambles, like shattered glass around her. Yeah. And then we watch the letterboxing kind of close in slowly on everything. I just thought that was really striking. I feel like we got a pretty strong theme of transition here through this episode. Like, we're seeing Marge actually start grieving the loss of her ex-husband. We're seeing both Melissa and Teresa transitioning one of their daughters to college. We're seeing Jen Fessler's birthday party. We're hearing about Frank Senior's house. The one person that we're not really seeing much of a transition with is Dolores. We're seeing her kind of stuck. And when the idea of marriage comes up later in the episode, we're seeing, you know, her kind of feel a little frustrated and stuck at the because Paul isn't divorced and there's like no movement on that. So I'm going to be interested to see how this evolves throughout the season, whether, you know, this is a source of frustration as she's seeing everyone else's life kind of evolve, and what that means for her as a character.
It's funny to me how when Louis's like, "What are you guys gonna get married? What are you gonna pop the question?" And Dolores is like, "Come on, that's not fair. He has to get divorced first." And like, you're not helping the situation by pointing out that he's been apparently separated from his wife for years and still hasn't gotten divorced. Like, that's
like 10 years.
That's a little weird.
That's a little weird. Yeah.
But I think that this goes back to something that we had mentioned last week about how these women are able to use the camera as like a tool and a piece of leverage within their relationships. Like, having this conversation get forced on camera and her being able to like say this in front of the camera, it puts an additional pressure on Polly. And Dolores has so much more experience using the camera to her advantage than Polly does. So this seemed like a very like calculated move that we have seen, you know, on a lot of occasions.
Why do you think Polly can't eat Italian food without like shitting himself? Apparently, what's the deal with that? That's the weirdest stomach ail that I've ever heard. Yeah. Is he just so Irish he can only digest like boiled cabbage and nothing else?
Yeah. Sardines and boiled cabbage.
And Lucky Charm cereal.
Tim, do you have a favorite quote from this episode?
Because I watched this one last night, I don't I don't have one line that sticks out in my head. To me, like most of this episode, just it felt like there was a lot of. I mean, there was a lot of talking, but there was a lot of shots of upset people. It seemed.
Yeah, I think it was. There was like a lot of. Foundation work here.
A lot of setting up.
There's one line that I really liked, which is when Polly says, like, if you're going to call a spade, you got to start calling a spade. Like, okay. Yeah, I get it, man. A tautology is a tautology, right? Like, what a meaningless thing to say.
Well, the sun's going to set somewhere today.
And when it does, you'll know the sun set.
Darkness will no longer be dark if there's light.
All right, let's dive into our highlights. Tim, we'll start with you. What were your highlights here?
Again, really just kind of focusing on the gene thing. It was like, Craig, you have kids. Have you thought about what it's going to be like when you send them off to military school? But like a moment like that is so tender. The separation of like that, the real forcing of that next step in your life, and to have that be played for a television audience. It's just, it's kind of nuanced and, I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, totally. Dylan, how about you? What were your highlights here?
That we have Cassie and Mazzy back, even though we don't really get to see much of them. But those two delightful, bizarre Dr. Seuss characters are the best.
Cassie and Mazzy.
Yeah, so good. Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, the big dramatic highlight is Fuda and Louis kind of getting at it, and Polly. I mean, the way that Fuda is becoming, like I said, this kind of like very gangsterish presence on the show, which I think is a side of him we saw in like the reunion last year, which I didn't even like know that was like. What this guy was like, and then now it seems like this season we're gonna see like real like gangster John Fuda breaking out, and the fact that he gets into it with Polly, and then you have Louis kind of hovering around doing his evil Joker laugh is pretty entertaining.
I enjoyed this episode, just as it felt a very like foundational Housewives episode, like getting back to like core gameplay. There was not a whole lot in terms of how like it wasn't a very artful presentation this episode, but there was a lot going on in terms of like the social aspect of trying to like play the social game. I like that we got insight into this kind of meeting of the minds that happens behind the scenes prior to the reunions. This got like called out through the story and through the edit that, you know, this is something that happens. Dolores is not phased at this information that there was a meeting in order to come up with a plan of attack. I thought that when we saw this confrontation between Polly and Fuda at the Jen Fessler's party, I thought that we saw, you know, Joe Gorga, who is, you know, a complete meathead and dunce, but he does know how to like play the game. We saw him actually trying to defuse this because, you know, Fuda does not have near the experience that Joe Gorga does, but I thought it was smart for Joe to try to defuse this, this conflict, because Dolores sits in the middle of this war. And by having this conflict between John Fuda and Polly potentially evolve into this thing, that forces Dolores onto the opposite side of, you know, Melissa's camp with Rachel and John. So I think that he saw this as something that could potentially be bad, and he was trying to defuse that situation so that, you know, at the very least, it doesn't force Dolores more onto the other side and kind of build up the numbers on that side, and kind of keeps things in check. I thought that was just a really interesting bit of strategy there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Also, Teresa seems to be ready to fly off the handle. She seems absolutely riled up going into the season. So that'll be fun to see where that takes her and takes us.
Yeah, totally. What do you think about this idea of whether this confrontation between Fuda and Louis should have happened at the party, or should it have happened at like a cafe?
Yeah. I mean, it's more entertaining to have it happen at a party. Then there's more possibility for other people like Joe to and Teresa to like get their paws in there. So I think John does kind of have a point, though, where he's like, you know, if I don't like respect you, why would I like say like, let's go hang out and talk it over?
You disrespected.
Doesn't he make that point? I think he says something like,
you disrespected my family.
So he's like, why would I give you that?
Show you the respect.
There you go. Why would I give you that like honor and privilege of sitting down with me at a special date for a special one-on-one encounter? Like, you don't deserve that. If he is like that riled up about it, that kind of makes sense. Yeah. That's a point that makes sense. Kind of,
yeah. Sure. Yeah. I don't know. Personally, if I was in that scenario, I would want to have a little one-on-one. But if I had TVs around, then or cameras around, I mean, I have a TV. Don't worry. I've got more TVs than I know what to do with. Okay. Ever since my sports bar closed down, I have mostly TVs. But yeah, like, I don't know. They could have done a little one-on-one at the party, you know, a little like sneaky camera picking it up. Them, you know.
Sure, but that never works because other people see the cameras pointed at them and then they want to get their mitts in there and they walk over and be like, "What's going on?" No.
yeah. Hey, what's going on over here?
I thought it was interesting that, you know, there is a little bit of a maintained separation between the guy drama and the women drama on this show. Like, we saw this argument that happened at the party. Dolores just stood there like a few feet away, just watching it happen and waiting to step in until, you know, it was absolutely necessary. I think that Jersey is really interesting in that respect, that there is this like secondary playing field for all this, you know, social game to happen on. It's not just the women that can move the ball. Okay, let's get into our stars. Who are your stars here, Tim?
I think I'm gonna give it to Teresa, the shit disturber, stirring pots, keeping it interesting. You know, you love a good line where they say they don't want to talk about this here, but then they talk about it with the hiring of the private investigator.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Dylan, how about you?
You know, let's give a first star to John Fuda for making such an impact out of the gate from the top of the season. His beard is carved in a way that's a little bit less distractingly horrifying than what it was in the previous season. So there's he's making some improvements on that front.
A little glow up for Johnny.
Yeah. One thing I love about New Jersey is just the way that people look, because they all have skin and hair that are colors that I've never seen on humans before.
Yeah.
It's like watching The Simpsons.
Yeah. Just like looking at Rachel Fuda. I'm like, I never would have thought that I would see like a color black on somebody's hair that I've never seen in the world before. And I feel like somehow she's found a black dye for her hair that's like a unique black. It's that could be like studied by scientists. I don't know why her hair looks like that. So yeah, Fuda number one, John. Even though I think he's a repulsive dude, but you know, let's see more of him being weirdly aggro. Let's give Teresa number two for making a sound I've never heard before. And third star to the Messler, because it's her night, and your party. You slept with Gandolfini. Flags fly forever. You're always going to be able to have that. Good for you.
You'll always have that.
I think my star is going to be, I think Dolores. I think we're seeing her kind of evolve as this center. What are they holding in the opening for New Jersey? I think it's a hip. I think they just hold their hips. Right. But anyways, the center pasta holder in this show, because the fan base is so divided, we can't, you know, keep putting Teresa in the middle. So I think that we're kind of seeing, I think this is going to be Dolores' season, to be honest.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I would give a star to Fuda, because he was really fired up and making things happen. And, you know, Teresa for giving the cameras what she always brings. She always brings it. And even I think the most like staunch Melissa supporter has to give it to her that she is always willing to like put it out there. Maybe that's not true. We're gonna get like zero star ratings because I just said that, but whatever.
Was Teresa's line the one about burning bridges because I'm on fire?
No, that was Melissa.
Oh, okay, it was Melissa. Okay, well, props to Melissa for that line. That was a good one.
Melissa is like a fantastic housewife. Like, I'm not saying like you don't have to pick one or the other. This is like one of those memes, the galaxy brain memes, where it's like start small if you're just a Melissa supporter, then a bit bigger of a brain if you're just a Teresa supporter, and then galaxy brain is being a supporter of both.
Yeah, and then there's the next step where you're just like a disincarnated figure floating in the galaxy, and
you're
that's
a
when you're a Gen 8 supporter.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Louis's good too, yeah. Kazi and Mazzy, that's the final stage. Just watching the show for appearances of Kazi and Mazzy.
Yeah. I think that about does it. Tim, thank you for doing this. Do you want to let everyone know where they can find you?
Oh yeah, at Tim Gray Rules with a Z, Tim Gray GRAY on Instagram is where I'm most active. I have a quick question for you guys. You don't even have to answer this now, but maybe you can think about it and discuss on a future episode. Is if they were to make a Real Housewives video game, which franchise would you want it to the first edition to be from, and which character would you play the storyline through first?
Oh, what would this game be like? I think is a
probably Vanderpump. Question. Yeah.
Would it be like a Grand Theft Auto kind of game where it's like you're just like running through the town and like
interacting? There are storylines that you can follow, but you're mostly just, you can go and work for the Oppenheimer group. Doing side missions for other reality shows.
Every series would have its own different genre. Like Jersey would be like a Smash Bros type game where you choose your character and you just beat the shit out of someone else.
That's why I gravitated to Jersey right away. I mean, it's recency bias, so it's just what we're talking about, but it does seem like Craig said have to have the most potential to be like aggressive and destructive and violent.
Your special weapon is a double-headed dildo. Did you guys see that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. How could you miss it?
Okay. How could you miss it?
Dylan, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you?
You know what? Let me rep something I haven't promoted in a while, but since we're talking about New Jersey, you should listen to my 4-episode limited edition podcast, The Devil You Don't, because it's about the history of New Jersey and cryptozoology. Oh, cool. And the creation of the United States. And there's there's even a brief Melissa Gorga reference in there. So there's a tiny, tiny crossover. The Venn diagram of this show and that show has a couple pixels overlap.
Yeah. Oh, when does this come out again? Sorry.
Last year.
This episode that we're recording now.
Oh, it'll come out tomorrow.
Oh, okay. I'm going on a tour with Chad Anderson, very funny comedian. We're going to be in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Alberta for the next 2 weeks. Regina, Saskatoon, Edmonton, Grand Prairie, Surrey, etc.
So look on your Instagram for dates.
Yeah. Zellers.biz. You can go to Zellers.biz for all the dates and tickets. That's a real website. I'm not joking.
Amazing.
I think our Canadian audience will appreciate that, but our audience skews American, so they have no idea what Zellers is.
Right. Zellers was those poor Canada's target.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's a long dead...
it's okay. You don't need to explain it. Department. That's not what people are here for.
No, I should just shut up.
Okay. Well, that's been Bravo Outsider for this week. You can find us online at Bravo Outsider on most social media platforms. We're also BravoOutsider.com. Subscribe to our YouTube. Leave us a rating on your platform of choice. Leave a comment. Tell your friends. That helps us out a ton. Until next week, keep on wifing.